Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
What do you make of the Me Too hashtag phenomenon? Well, the Me Too hashtag surfaced after revelations of decades of sexually abusive behaviour against women by a powerful Hollywood producer, Harvey Weinstein. Around the world, thousands of women have been sharing that hashtag, Me Too, on their social media, Facebook, Twitter and so on, to indicate that they too have been the victim of sexual harassment at work. The social media reaction interests me for a whole range of reasons. Firstly, it's deeply shameful for our society to operate in a way that allows men to think that women are mere sex objects and fair game in the workplace. Of course, not all men are in that category, but on the strength of the evidence of women coming forward, this is not something isolated or unusual. It's a culture. And it's a culture that we must deal with. Women have been telling that story for decades, but it's also interesting that it's only in this social media age and prominent women coming forward with their stories that men are starting to take notice. I have a lot of female friends, and when I speak with them, almost every one of them has had a first-hand experience of this behaviour themselves. It's those conversations that remind me that for women, the workplace is a constant bombardment against their very gender, ranging from the casual sexism of expecting women to be the ones to make coffee or serve the food, right through to serious criminal assault in the workplace. It's so important to ensure that we change cultures and uphold principles of making work a safe place, a place for safe and respectful relationships. And the other thing that I find really interesting about this Me Too phenomenon is that many of the women coming forward with their own story have kept it a deep secret for years. They've been either too traumatized or ashamed or perhaps embarrassed to share their story. Isn't it interesting that having buried it for so long, that the hashtag Me Too seems to have given them coverage or license to share their deep secrets in a very social medium? Well, for these reasons, many people are speculating that Me Too has become something of a watershed, a real turning point. Well, only time will tell, of course, but to help pick our way through some of those ideas, we went to one of Australia's leading business people, Wendy Simpson. Wendy has been a finalist for the Telstra Businesswoman of the Year on several occasions, including in 2017. She was Senior Vice President for Alcatel in Shanghai and instrumental in negotiations to open China up to the internet. Wendy is the chairman of her own company, and she's on the board of a number of not-for-profits, including World Vision. When I invited Wendy to come in and talk to me about the Me Too hashtag, she told me a story that I didn't expect to hear. Well, Wendy Simpson, welcome to Open House.
Yes, it's great to be here.
What have you made of the way Me Too has just taken off?
Yes, I think what it's done is open the channel for women to give, it validates how they want to tell their story. It validates that it is okay to tell our story. And I think the most important thing is that it's a way of being part of something so that you are not isolated, because one of the scary things in telling a story that's so personal and so intense is that you can feel like you're the odd one out. So it's kind of been a rallying point for sure.
Now, you're known as a woman who's been able to reach the top levels of business administration in Australia, both at a governance level and also at an operational level, and you've sat on many boards and you run your own company. Is sexual harassment something that you've encountered in your workplace?
Well, sadly, it is. And just reflecting on the hashtag Me Too, I want to tell you about a story of when I was 16 and I was applying for a job, and it was in a retail environment, as a lot of 16-year-old kids, you know, work in a shop.
Yep.
And so the shop owner said, you know, we'd really be interested in employing you. I need to show you the various parts of where we operate here, and I need to take you out to the storeroom. So we went out, and then he got me amongst the racks of where the products were stored, shut the door and pushed me against the wall, put his hands up so that I couldn't escape, and said, right now, how badly do you want this job?
Oh, my word.
And so, you know, instinctively I knew this is not a safe place. So I had to push him away, like really aggressively push him away, and unlocked the door and ran out. And, you know, my adrenaline was pumping. That was a very scary moment for sure. And I've never told anyone that story. So I guess this hashtag moment is given me the, you know, the chance to say, yes, it does happen.
Well, I want to thank you for trusting us with that story. And it really goes to the issue that I wanted to ask you about. Yes. I wasn't aware of that story. Yes. I'm interested in the idea that women find now the comfort to do that, as you say, in the company of others. That's something that's so painful that you've never spoken to anyone about it before. What gives you the courage to suddenly talk about that on national radio?
Well, I think that there is a tipping point where women are saying there is absolutely no excuse in any circumstance for this to happen.
No.
And yet clearly society has said, well, you know, the kind of things happen. And, well, he didn't actually do anything, but he was intended to. And if I hadn't have had that sense of self and the strength to push away, then, you know, I would have been in an extremely vulnerable situation. So I think it is important that we understand that it's never been okay, but somehow now we're able to say that, and that's so important.
What effect has the memory of that had on you during your long and very distinguished career?
Well, I think that there have been a number of times when, as a woman in a man's world, all my working life I've been in a man's world, where I am on my guard. When there was a spate of men breaking into cars, hiding in the back seat, there was this is something that a group of women said to me, do you still, before you get in your car, look in the back seat before you hop in? And it's surprising the number of women who say, absolutely, I never get in to a car before I look in the back seat. So there is that sense that most of us have been on our guard our whole lives.
I feel that the majority of women who I know have some experience akin to yours. And yet, as a man, I'm embarrassed that I don't remember that as a reality of what it is to be a woman in our society today, to live with that constant level of fear. Am I right in thinking that you absorb that about what the reality of being a woman is, always being on your guard?
Yes. I think I wouldn't call it fear, but it is, it's constant alert.
Yes.
There could be something happening, so I'm ready for it.
Well, you have written and spoken over the years about women finding it difficult to break through to the upper echelons of business. With that as a background, that you're on your guard, then you enter into boardrooms and other places of male power. And from what we've seen in the United States and also here in Australia, it's where power meets, where power enters this situation that it becomes very bad. In your case, as a 16-year-old, a potential employer. In the case of the Harvey Weinstein people, it's, you know, people who are, he's casting for important roles. But we now see that as wherever there's male power, it can become a culture within an organisation. And then the organisation does something to either excuse or cover it up. So as you've made your way into the boardrooms of Australia, have you encountered attitudes that made you aware that you still needed to be on your guard, that the culture wasn't a female-friendly place?
Yes, I think so. When we talk about business leaders, I use the word business leaders, but still the culture is often businessmen. So the language is, what's normal is to use the male pronoun when we're describing leadership, when we're describing potential candidates, when there's a discussion around the boardroom. What I've done is always wired it, rather than say men and women, I say women and men, so that there's a shift in just how I get the language started. But often it's always the male pronoun. And there's the sense that I think many women would say around a boardroom, there's a series of ideas put forward. The woman will put forward the idea, at least 5 or 10 minutes before it's actually recognised, and it's the male board member who says exactly what the woman said, and then suddenly, oh, yes, we're listening. So one of the things I do when I ask for an MC to introduce myself or any other female speaker is to actually read their CV.
Mm.
And often when a woman is a keynote speaker, they'll say, well, we all know Wendy Simpson or we all know Margaret Smith, so let's just welcome her to the stage. And I say, we actually need men and women to pause and listen to women's achievements. Just
yes.
listen to the list
yes.
So that we can actually understand that women are achieving things, because so often women's achievements are seen as invisible. And if you're invisible as a person, then what happens to you, dangerous things that happen to you, are also invisible. And so this hashtag is actually saying what happens to 50% of our population, what happens to 50% of the image bearers of God really actually does matter.
Yes, I've been reading that we need to think about a new a way of approaching sexuality, and by this the writer actually meant gender roles from a biblical perspective. God made us as male and female. To the extent that this is ever spoken about, Wendy, it's so often in very stereotypical roles that relate to, you know, families, archetypal families. And I'm not criticizing that per se, but I suppose I am with the writer in thinking that we need to do more than that. What is it to be a man and be exercising maleness in the way that God would have intended us to, quite apart from issues of, you know, sex and procreation? What is it to be a woman, quite apart from the idea of, well, you're going to be a mother, aren't you? What is it to be that, and how do we have those roles together in the boardrooms of Australia, in the marketplace, in the workplaces, in the stores and in the schools? What do women contribute? So I'd love to hear what you say about that. What do women contribute to those situations that men just at the moment aren't getting?
Yes, I think that's a very interesting question about the boardrooms and the fact that we are struggling still to identify talented women to sit on board seats. And so there is a challenge that we're not bringing through women. We're not saying that that's important. There is also the challenge about understanding, well, what do women bring? And that in Australia now, for economic circumstances, as much as anything, every workplace has large numbers of women.
Hmm.
And so to understand, well, are they only there? Are they only motivated to come because they need the money? Or does that corporation actually become enhanced because it has women there? So is it more than just an economic discussion? Is it the thinking? Is it the nuances? Is it the understanding of collaboration? Is it the insights that women bring that, in most cases, 50% of the customers of that organisation, or in case of Christian radio, for example, we know that the majority of the listeners are women. So in some cases, actually having women in the organisation is a huge insight, because they bring such a connection with the customers, and any organisation that invests in understanding its customers is certainly going to be very successful. So,
yes, yes.
So women do bring a range of things. They bring an insight to customers. They bring an insight into how to collaborate. And also women, I think, challenge the fact that we have to have the most important meeting of the day at 8 a.m.
Yes.
Which is very difficult.
Yeah.
If women are dropping off children,
why does
the most important meeting of the day have to be at 8 a.m.? I mean, when do we have important meetings? Who needs to be in them? I think women are challenging the workplace practices as well.
Hmm. I really relate to what you said a few minutes ago, which is that a woman will have an idea. It'll fall on the table while everybody else butts in. And then a man will say the same thing and it'll be taken up. Now, I've seen that occur.
Mm.
My wife has that happen to her very often in her experience. Other women I know have said the same thing. As the chairman of boards, I well understand that it's my job to let every good idea find its place and also have its owner. And so I'll deliberately stop and sometimes go around the room and just make sure that we're checked in with everybody so that they can all participate in the discussion. But it seems to me that I've come to that having worked through my own understanding about the role of men and women in society. If it's the case that our boardrooms are still made up of people who largely see women as exceptions. Well, you're here because we've got a diversity policy. And worse still, if they see them as really a sex object, something to be ogled, then little wonder our workplaces are so out of shape.
Yes, so true. And there are often still the comments, the unnecessary comments. And to some extent, you know, the Julia Gillard story of everyone commenting on her hairstyle, her clothing.
I think she was treated appallingly.
So that whole era of and unless you dress in a certain way, have a hair in a certain way, then you're not a leader. So the quality of someone's leadership, their preparation let's take boardrooms, for example, the intensive reading of their board papers, the thoughtful preparation, but because their hair isn't in a certain way, therefore what they say doesn't matter. Mm. Now, as we know, often men don't have particular hairstyles, but there is that inequity about...
often,
you know,
they don't have hair.
That's correct. Yes. So that is really, we as a nation are missing out if we allow that to continue. I think there's starting to be a recognition of that. I say to people, it's a good thing that Australia has both a women's and a men's Olympic swimming team, because
yes,
we need as many gold medals as we can. When we want to be on the gold medal tally, we want the men and women performing to the best they can.
Well, I love what's happening in women's cricket and other forms of sport as well, AFL, for goodness sake. Wendy, it's also wrong if we're not letting people be who God made them to be. And if we're not allowing a woman to use her gifts, we're stifling her stewardship of what God's given her. And I think that's a tremendous wrong that we're doing to a person if we prevent them from being the one that God, you know, making the contribution that God has uniquely made them to make.
Yes, correct. And I think there are organisations that, if you think back in time of Hudson Taylor, who prayed for harvest workers to come to China, and he said, oh my goodness, God, you only sent me 20 women. And yet look what happened to his ministry. So when people say, I'm asking you, Lord, to provide me with talented workers, and I'm not going to say they have to be men or women, I just want talented workers, and not be discouraged like Hudson Taylor was, that, oh my goodness, oh well, I'll have to do with the women. But in fact, ask God for a provision of talent and then gratefully receive it and celebrate that he's given you a team of both men and women.
Highly respected business leader Wendy Simpson is with us on Open House, and we're talking about the hashtag MeToo phenomenon. On Open House, as you know, Wendy, we like to look at life through the lens of faith and then point to hope. So if the hashtag phenomenon has allowed people to share their experiences in a way that's becoming more safe because it's communal, just as you've done today, can you move us forward to a better place? How can we find a better dialogue between men and women that's respectful, that can still be enjoyed as an appropriate relationship, but without any overtones of nastiness, and certainly nothing that would lead to sexual harassment of women? How do we find a more equitable place? Do you get any signs that that's happening in Australia?
The fierce competition for elite positions, of course, leads to this whole imbalance of power and the Weinstein situation, where he was seen as the kingmaker, that he had the power to control whether you did or didn't have Oscar nominations, whether you did or didn't, as an actor or an actress, you know, get various roles. So when there is fierce competition, that's when people like Weinstein, you know, gain their power. But if we move to a more collaborative model, which is that we share the power, that means that one person can't accumulate it all.
Mm.
So I don't see that at the moment in Australia. I do see that fierce competition, that scarcity mentality, which is there's only a small pie, and if you get a bit more, then you've obviously taken some of mine, and so I'm going to fight you for it, is really unhelpful. But if we say, which is more in the entrepreneur model, that where I do see green shoots are how entrepreneurs think, and entrepreneurs do sit to each with each other and say, how can I help you? If I help you, you'll help me. And certainly Silicon Valley, the entrepreneur community there, there are startup community gatherings in Sydney where people are all swapping ideas.
And Brisbane has quite a famous example as well.
Yes, that certainly helps.
If you could go back to your 16-year-old self running out of that shop, what would you say?
Congratulations for standing your ground and knowing that what's happened to you was inappropriate.
Yes.
I'd also grieve for the fact that why should it be dangerous to do a site visit of a potential employer and say, what has happened to a shop owner that he would think that taking you behind the scenes into the storeroom was okay.
And how many others have suffered in the same way?
Yes, that's right.
But you'd tell your 16-year-old self to keep going, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, keep going.
And wouldn't you say this is not about you, this is about him, and there's nothing that you did to contribute to this situation, and you didn't feel ashamed, and it's okay to share the story.
Yes.
And it's okay to be cranky about it, really, really
yes.
angry about it.
Yes, yes, that's right. I think it's that giving, voicing the incident and then giving permission to say that was wrong and that that a workplace, well, basically anywhere, is not okay for there to be workplace bullying or to be pushing women into a place where they are going to be raped. That is not okay in any place and any time.
Mm.
But because the hashtag is about the workplace, there's a real concern that people think that vulnerable people, vulnerable teenage girls, they're okay.
Some people are calling this a watershed moment in our history. And one of the reasons they're saying that is that men, well, sadly, some people say it's because men have now validated the stories of women. And certainly there's an element of that, isn't there? But it's a time when we've now been able to start listening to something that women have been trying to tell us for years. And I hope that's how this ends up as well.
Yes, I think the data does help. I mean, how do you actually get this information? I think because it's being volunteered, because it's seen as it's okay and we're joining with others. So if you send out a survey, most people wouldn't answer it. But because this is kind of a voluntary thing and it's started by a woman and there is a momentum.
And what Tracy Spicer is doing in Australia in the media industry is very interesting.
Yes, yes. This is calling out for, if you have something to tell me, you know, I will listen to you, I will believe you, and together we'll do something about changing it.
So one of those moments where nations just have to sort of go to their knees and just go to God in repentance and say, gosh, we've got to be better than this. But human nature is so, when the light shines on it, human nature has some nasty, nasty bits to it, wherever you look. Tells me of the need for a saviour.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, this pretense that I can just put this this mask on and I can pretend everything's okay. What Jesus came to say is that you don't have to put a mask on, that I'm offering you hope, I'm offering you forgiveness, and you can have freedom because actually deep down you're not free when you're doing that. When people are harassing people because of their power position, they're not free.
Mm. Nobody is free.
Correct.
Well, Wendy Simpson, thank you for being with us.
Yes, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.